Welcome back to another edition of Veterinary Advice, Animal News and Views. I'm your host, Roger Welton, practicing veterinarian, coming to you from the Florida Space Coast. Thank you very much for joining me this evening. So take another little detour here from my preventative pet healthcare series, and we'll get back to that. But a lot of what I'd like to discuss on the air pertains to my experiences in everyday practice. And I've had some doozy experiences this week. And I just felt compelled to talk about it, write about it, because, you know, these are lessons learned for me as a veterinarian, but lessons we can all learn as people in a society where, unfortunately, a great deal of ignorance about a lot of things prevails. A lot of the bad things we see, not just in veterinary medicine, but in life, is not the result of bad people, neglectful people, people with bad intentions or ill intentions. But in the end is the result of ignorance. And when I say ignorance, I'm not necessarily accusing people of something that's bad or sinister. I am simply stating that they don't know. And yes, there are many cases where they could have taken the time to know. They could have made the effort to know. At the same time, not everybody is assertive like that. Not everybody has the humility to know that they don't know, and they assume that they know. And again, I'm not just talking about veterinary medicine here, pet healthcare, husbandry, the proper way to care for a companion animal. I'm just talking about life in general. It can apply in so many different circumstances. But of course, my wheelhouse and my expertise is veterinary medicine. And again, boy, did I have a doozy of a week. So as per the title of tonight's episode, the week that ignorance was in full display, I just couldn't believe it. It was like case after case after case. So I'm just going to highlight three of the ones that were at the foremost of my mind. But folks, this week was just very disappointing. You know, I feel very grateful every day that I get to be a veterinarian. I get to go to work and work with the kind of patients and creatures that I love, work with the type of people that I want to, that I really truly respect and care about because of the fact that they give this selfless love to their pets. But I got to tell you, it's not all giggles, not always. And this week, case in point. So, you know, I generally like to keep this show upbeat, and I like to talk about things that are helpful from the perspective of better ways to care for your pet, general knowledge, uplifting stories, things of that nature. So I'm going to go a little negative today, but you know, it's also my job and my duty, I feel, to try to right some wrongs. And I saw a lot of wrongs this week. So let's start with my first one. It came to me on Monday. English Bulldog, 7.5 years old, had been sick for a week. So a week of not eating and just didn't want to move around much. And the owner had actually assumed that the dog had a breathing problem because it really couldn't seem to be able to catch its breath. And the dog was not spayed. And in she came, and I'm examining the dog and feeling the abdomen, and I'm just feeling this just enlarged, soft, doughy structures in the abdomen. I looked back in her genitalia area, and I saw there was a thick discharge back there. That's when it occurred to me, I don't think this dog has a breathing problem. This dog is pyometra. So what is pyometra? Let's talk about that real quick. Pyometra is an infection that develops in the canine uterus. It occurs as a result of pH and uterine lining abnormalities that result from abnormal hormonal cycles that we can see as the pet ages. It's very common in English Bulldogs, but I see a lot of pyometra, and I shouldn't see a lot of pyometra because you got a female dog, it should be spayed. Unless it's a breeding dog, dogs should be spayed. And if a dog is spayed, not only is that a happier dog, a healthier dog, a dog that's less predisposed to mammary cancer later in life, but it's also a dog that's not going to get pyometra. Well, sure enough, this dog had pyometra. This is not an infection that's going to clear with antibiotics, because this infection in this particular case, had gone for so long. Mind you, this dog was sick for a week before it came to see me. So lesson one, dog is sick for a day or two, get him to the vet. But you know, this dog had it had gone to progress to the point where this dog wouldn't eat anything. And so what occurs is it becomes so severe that the uterus is just full of essentially pus. And antibiotics, they need blood supply to get to an area to clear an infection. And because the discharge and fluid is so dense and so thick, you can't deliver enough antibiotic to it. And thus, basically, you have to do an emergency ovarohysterectomy. Got to remove the female reproductive tract. And you have to do it very carefully because, number one, the dog's already in shock because it's got this toxic uterus. But number two, if that uterus is to rupture as you're surgically removing it, that all that toxic stuff spills in the abdomen, well, the prognosis goes down pretty precipitously. So, yeah, it's no small matter. It's not an inexpensive matter either. I mean, this is major surgery, requires a couple days of hospitalization at least. And I presented, you know, the treatment plan, and treatment plans have associated costs, and you could see the lady was quite shocked. And the boyfriend turns to her, or significant other, or husband, I'm not sure, turns to her and said, well, you have no choice. You made the lame decision to not spay her. This is what you got to do. He said, and by the way, I hope you learn from this. This is the boyfriend saying this. I hope you learn from this and you go home and you got all your other animals spayed, because this is ridiculous. I'm guessing if he's concerned about their joint finances, perhaps maybe fiance or husband, but I didn't ask. Not my business. But at any rate, we had to go to emergency surgery and everything went well. I'm glad it turned out well. And luckily this lady somehow could afford it. And I'm happy about that. And, you know, this dog will go on to be fine. And it's a good thing. But, you know, again, it's a matter of, you know, the lady, when she came to pick up, she was so grateful that her dog, you know, was alive. Nice lady, not a bad lady, you know, loves her dog. Spent a pretty good amount of money to have her saved. And you know, I don't want to sit back and judge her, but, you know, she came in and she just said, you know, doc, I'm so sorry. I didn't know this could happen. And I said, well, now you know, tell your friends, tell everyone you know, because not knowing could have led to disaster. And I'm not going to sit here and judge you because you didn't know, because just getting to know you over the past couple of days, I know you would never intentionally do anything to harm this dog. You love this dog. She was almost in tears when she dropped her off. So, you know, do I care about this person because she loves her dog? Of course I do. And you know, definitely genuinely a good person there. But had no idea of the bad things that can happen if you don't spay your dog. And this is one of them. So luckily that's a happy ending there. Let's move on to the next experience. This one, the ending is still yet to be written, but this was a crazy case. So this dog comes in. It's a very large pit bull, very sweet dog, but very sick dog. Had been vomiting for 7 days. Had been unable to hold down food or water for 7 days. 2-year-old pit bull. Now this particular dog, at 2 years old, had never once seen a veterinarian. Or had never once been seen by a veterinarian, never been dewormed, was covered in fleas, never had any, obviously wasn't neutered, but never had one vaccine in his life. So of course, the first thing I'm thinking is, this could be infectious disease, and chief in my brain is parvo. You know, parvo is very, very common disease. I've covered it in the Preventative Pet Healthcare series. And to learn more about the disease, I'd encourage you to take a look at that. But parvo has a 50% mortality rate, even with the most aggressive and best therapy. But of course, I don't know that it's parvo at this point in time because, you know, I'm working through this case and I isolated the room just to be sure, bleached everything this dog touched. But we run some blood work and we take some x-rays and blood work's perfect. And, you know, while I did not have the means to test for parvo in the office, you know, that's a stool test that you send out, parvovirus, that is, the blood work was not indicative of parvo, and also the presentation wasn't either, because while there was a great deal of constant vomiting, there was no diarrhea. And of course, not all dogs read the textbook, but one of the hallmarks of parvo is really fetid smelling, liquid, bloody diarrhea. And so there's usually anemia associated with this disease, not only because the parvovirus not only attacks the gut, but it also suppresses the bone marrow, makes the bone marrow less able to make blood cells. So the low red blood cells can result, which is the definition of anemia. But also the anemia comes from them losing blood in the stool. So there's two ways they become anemic. They're almost always anemic. I don't think I've ever seen a parvo case that wasn't anemic. But also the white blood cells that are the primary and first line of defense in times of infection, those are also synthesized in the bone marrow. And that, because the bone marrow is suppressed, they're not synthesized, and so they're immune deficient and they have low white blood cells. And again, typically you'll see that with parvo. Well, neither of those. And I thought, okay, well, this could be pancreatitis. I ruled that out with a test called a PLI. So all I have to go on is I see a lot of material in the stomach, and this dog's just getting sicker and sicker as we're working him up. And both me and the radiologist, because we have all our films backup read by board-certified radiologists, that they're imaging specialists, we all concurred that this looks like there's a soft tissue density foreign body in the stomach. That is, the dog swallowed something that got lodged in the stomach. Well, I present the lady with a treatment plan for the removal of this suspect foreign body, but I told her that, you know, unless we're looking at a rock sitting there of mineral opacity or something that's metallic that'll show up brightly in an x-ray, you know, like fish hooks and things of that nature, you know, there is some speculation here because we don't know definitively, but his abdomen hurt, nonstop vomiting, can't hold anything down, foreign body makes sense. Ultimately, we get into emergency surgery. Now, this lady did not have the funds to, you know, pay for this, so she applied for what's called care credit. It's interest-free financing. That is for medical lending specifically. You know, so, of course, she's using money she doesn't have. But we had to do it. It was an emergency. I was there till 9 p.m. On a day I should have left no later than 6 to care for this dog. She could not afford going for 24-hour critical care at another facility, so, you know, we stayed and did it. So I get in there, and very odd, her intestinal contents were pretty much empty, or I'm sorry, his intestinal contents were pretty much empty. Stomach was full of fluid, but it didn't have a solid object in there. It did not have the ability to empty. I went inside the stomach and syringed out all that fluid, suctioned it all out, got a look in there, and I didn't see, you know, anything in there other than the fact that it was wanting to fill up again with fluid. So, you know, very ambiguous case at this point. I close a little incision I made into the stomach, and I go a little bit further down to an area called the pylorus, which is the outflow valve of the stomach. It's what's called a sphincter valve, kind of like the anal sphincter, but it's at between the stomach and the small intestine, and that's where the stomach empties into the small intestine through this valve. Well, the tissue there felt very thickened. There was a band of tissue that just seemed excessive to me. So I assume that the problem at that point was a condition known as pyloric stenosis, where that pylorus becomes thickened and abnormal. It can happen for primary and secondary reasons. In this case, as we'll find out in a couple minutes here, it was a secondary reason. But nonetheless, the stomach could not empty, and this dog had no chance unless we could create a scenario where this stomach could empty and food could move along and this dog could start getting sustenance again. So I do a little procedure called a pyloroplasty, where I reconstruct the valve and open it up, and suddenly you see the stomach contracting, you see the intestines start working again, and things get moving, and I'm thinking, okay, I think we've identified this problem. Well, everything goes well. I close the dog, and as the dog's waking up, suddenly it's like Noah's flood unleashed. So I reestablished passage of the bowel, and now the dog starts, just while still asleep, were recovering him, starts blowing with blood-tinged, foul-smelling diarrhea. So I took a sample of it, sent it out, and lo and behold, the next morning, dog's doing decent, better than he was the day before, but we confirmed this dog had parvo. So things suddenly change. We cordon off our hospital ward because I don't have an isolation facility. Infectious disease of that nature, you need an isolation facility with negative pressure ventilation to make sure there's no contamination in the rest of the hospital. I don't have that. So I had to basically close down my whole hospital ward. Luckily, nothing came in that needed to be hospitalized. And we just had to take major, major precautions. But I called the owner at this point. I said, look, now that I've confirmed parvo, I cannot hospitalize this dog here any longer. We're not an isolation facility. It's not ethical, nor is it plausible for me to hospitalize your dog any further. You know, at this point, is now we know the pyloric stenosis, the functional obstruction of the stomach was secondary probably to swelling, edema, and scarring of the pylorus because of all the vomiting secondary to parvo, right? So the answers all came. Remember, I alluded earlier that this turned out to be a secondary pyloric problem. So as a result, you know, I said, you know, the only isolation facility I'm aware of would be the emergency clinic up the road, that they're 24-hour critical care. Of course, there's going to be significant costs associated with that for 24-hour emergency medicine. And you know, the lady basically just said, you know, I just can't afford that. So I asked her, just, you know, call around to some general practices that might be able to accommodate you. Well, now, of course, she'd already spent, you know, quite a bit on what we'd done to date. So long story short, she comes to pick up the dog and basically says, look, I'm just going to take my chances. So I write her some prescriptions of oral medication, oral antibiotics, gastric protectants, whatnot, pain management for her to pick up and hopefully manage at home. But I did tell her that, you know, again, with aggressive, constant intensive care therapy, 50% of parvo cases don't make it. You take them out of a hospital setting, you're going to cut that guarded prognosis in half at best. So then she alluded to the fact that she's a medical assistant and, you know, would be willing to do bolus IV treatments at home if I would approve that. And I said, of course, you know, take some fluid bags home. We gave her a little tutorial on how to run fluids. And again, the jury's out as to what's going to happen with this particular case. We don't know. That was just yesterday that the dog went home. But shortly after the dog is discharged, she calls back. Apparently, she's got the sick dog's sister, who's been fine, who suddenly they discovered started with vomiting and diarrhea and was severely sick. This was yesterday. So I tell the owner, I said, look, you need to get her veterinary care as soon as possible. I cannot see a parvo positive dog here because it is very likely she's got the same disease. And before it gets out of hand, we're having to surgically open up the outflow valve of his stomach to reestablish the ability for food and water to pass through there. You know, you want to get on this as quickly as possible. Well, then she says to me, well, she's different than him. I did get shots for her. I said, okay, well, that's encouraging. When did you have them done? Now, granted, they're litter mates, so she's 2 years old. She said, well, she had one puppy shot when she was a puppy. I said, okay, so one puppy shot. So the parvo immunization protocol, as per my preventative pet healthcare episode on parvo, is a vaccination given at 6, 9, and 12 weeks. So three total vaccinations within a 9-week period. And then we're going to booster it at 1 year. And then thereafter, give it every 3 years, right? And we establish that protocol because that's what you need to do, according to the research. So I said, if this puppy only had one vaccine, never boosted ever again, then she probably has parvo. So I don't know where that situation's going, but, you know, obviously the dog couldn't be seen by us. I don't know if she's been able to find outside care. I hope she has, but, you know, again, a case of just so much ignorance. You know, the lady's crying over both of the dogs. Obviously, she's using money she doesn't have to pay for what needs to be done. So clearly there's love there. Yet they're covered in fleas. I assume the other dog is as well. Never seen a veterinarian. And somehow she thinks that one vaccine as a puppy is enough for the life of the dog. And of course, because of that, the litter mate, the other one doesn't need vaccines either. You know, it's just, you just sit there and think to yourself, you know, how does this happen? How does this much lack of any knowledge of what is supposed to be done to prevent this sort of thing? How does this not happen? You know, what, how do we get to this point? And this is what's even more troubling. This is a medical assistant, right? So she works in the medical field. So if you have this kind of ignorance among people who really should know better, working as medical assistants, that, you know, vaccines have to be boosted, that ectoparasites such as fleas are a nuisance and a health risk, that bad things can happen when dogs don't get veterinary care, they don't get stool analysis, they don't get any parasite treatments. I mean, it was just amazing to me. But again, I sit back and I try not to judge. But it's hard sometimes. It really is hard sometimes. I sometimes think that, you know, maybe my perspective is different because I've been trained in this. It's what I do for a living, that maybe I just take all of this for granted and I'm a little bit too hard on people when it comes to, I don't know, reflecting on the amount of ignorance that I see sometimes. But whatever the case, just disappointing for the person, disappointing for the dog, disappointing for the other dog, disappointing for that family, disappointing for me as a veterinarian. Very, very troubled circumstance. And I'll leave you with the last one. This one's not too bad, but still, you know, just ignorance across the board. So gentleman comes in, he's got a little black cat, cute little thing, a little petite cat, 3 years old. Never had veterinary care. Luckily, she's not violently ill. She came in to see us because she was itching a lot. And she also had little white worms in her stool that the owner found incidentally. But otherwise, the cat wasn't acting sick, just really itchy, losing some clumps of hair and had these little white worms. Well, I go right for my flea comb. A couple of swipes through the kitty. I comb out like 40 fleas in like two or three swipes. So what we have is a severe flea infestation. This gentleman came in with maybe, 12, 16-month-old infant child in the car seat. And got this cat that's, you know, completely covered in fleas. And, you know, I said, well, here's our problem. This is your source of all the problems. So the skin issues are from the flea bites and irritation from the flea bites. And looks like we're morphing, you know, if we get ahead of this soon, hopefully we can stop the fleas and keep secondary skin infections from occurring. But the little white worms in the stool are tapeworms that this cat got from the fleas. The infective larvae for the flea tapeworm actually lives in the gut of the flea. It's really tiny. So the kitty, as they're getting bitten, especially in this case, bitten constantly, they try to lick and groom themselves to stop the discomfort. And in the process, they swallow the fleas, and that's how they get infected. So realistically, the actual worms don't pose a risk to other cats, dogs, or people, because you got to eat the flea to get infected. At any rate, his main issue was the worms. He was most concerned about the worms. And I said, look, the worms need to be treated. I agree. Let me get your treatment plan. I do really think that the fleas need to be dealt with. And we got this great product called Cherisin. It's a topical. It will start killing all the fleas within an hour of administration. And it will give you flea killing power for the next 30 days. And then you just keep this kitty on regular flea preventive. We should not get a relapse of the tapeworm infestation. And in addition, we should not have any more discomfort. So, you know, everybody wins. And I told him, lastly, you know, we occasionally see cases of Yersinia pestis, which is plague. It's black plague, that medieval disease that wiped out, you know, more than half of Europe. It's still around, and it's carried by fleas. The fleas lived on, back then, the rats and the cats, and that's how it infiltrated these urban centers and just decimated populations. Of course, it's not the same risk that it was then, because we have antibiotics. It's a bacteria that caused this disease, but still, children get plague around the world, and even in this country. There was a case recently in California of a boy who was sleeping with his flea-ridden cat and got plague from the fleas on the cat. So I said, look, you have a little one right there, 16 months old. That's a risk. It's a risk of, you know, bacterial infection if the fleas bite the baby. But also, you know, there's a plague risk. Not good to have this number of fleas on one creature. Well, as it turns out, there's a couple of dogs as well. So you got to really treat everybody in the home if you think you're going to get ahead of these fleas. Well, in the end, he goes, I want the worms treated right now. I don't have enough money on me to do it all. So I said, okay, well, your priority really then should be the fleas. And you could always come back for the tapeworm injection. Really, I would prioritize the fleas if it's going to be one or the other. Well, he insisted that he'll do the worms, and he'll just come back tomorrow for the fleas. We're only talking about a matter of a day. He doesn't want to bring the cat back, and, you know, come back tomorrow for the box of flea preventive. And that way I can do it all. I just can't do it all today. I said, okay, well, that sounds good. Fair enough. Let's do it. I'll give the injection and what have you. So anyway, tomorrow was yesterday. Came and went, never came back. Today's day two. Didn't come back today either. So, you know, the fleas are persisting. The tapeworms, even though I treated them, will probably come back. That baby's at risk. That cat is probably absolutely miserable, getting bitten hundreds of times a minute. It's probably going to, at some point, develop skin infections. I may see him again, I may not, I don't know. The cat's going to have to be seen by somebody at some point if he doesn't do something about the fleas. But again, you know, this is a case of ignorance. It's a case of, I guess, a little bit more guilty, this guy, because here I am educating him as mandated by my job and my profession, and he's not heeding what I'm asking him to do and focus on fleas. You know, I don't know how anyone could live knowing that there's fleas in their home. I don't know how anybody can do that, because, you know, they're bugs. There's bugs everywhere. You know, fleas are bugs. They're no different, but they're bugs that spread disease, and they're bugs that will readily bite people. They can't reproduce on people. They can't complete their life cycle with people, but, you know, they will accidentally bite you, and so they're a nuisance to you as well, and I don't know. I don't know how anyone could knowingly live with fleas, but whatever the case, that's my week, and that's just the tip of the iceberg, folks. It was just case after case of ignorance, and, you know, again, I'm not saying bad people. I'm saying the lack of any sort of knowledge or putting. At any rate, it is what it is. I got through the week. Got to vent here on the air to you folks. And I'm just going to ask you a favor. Please learn from this episode. Please feel my frustration and heed these difficulties that are happening all over the country as we speak. You know, we're just a little microcosm of what's going on all over the country. And try to educate, try to spread the word about the proper things to do, the right way to care for animals, spaying, neutering, wellness care. This is why I have gone through all of these lengths to reach out and do my preventative pet healthcare series, is to prevent this stuff. So help me educate. I appreciate your time and for listening to me vent tonight. You have a great evening and look forward to talking to you again.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.